This week on Behind the Lens. Allegations of grade inflation at the John F. Kennedy High School have left students in limbo, unsure if they've officially graduated. Marta Jusen has the story. And living with water. The Army Corps of Engineers is preparing to open the Morganza Spillway, relieving pressure on the Mississippi River and diverting water through the Atchafalaya Basin. I'll talk with Corps spokesman Ricky Boyette about the mechanics and Tulane professor Alex Kolker about the environmental impacts of river diversions. I'm Jessica Rosegard. You're listening to Behind the Lens, a podcast by The Lens.
Brought to you by community support. Learn more at support.thelensnola.org.
Following up on a story you heard here on Behind the Lens, the CEO of New Beginnings Schools Foundation resigned a few weeks ago over allegations of grade inflation at John F. Kennedy High School. Now, more officials have left the school, and students are waiting for their transcripts with questions about their future. Marta Jusen has been reporting this story, and she joins me now. Marta, remind us of the foundations of this story. An official at John F. Kennedy High School came forward with evidence that school grades were being tampered with.
That's right. So in January, Ronell King noticed these problems with grades, and he went to his administration, the CEO, who actually ended up resigning, and they did an investigation. He was suspended during the investigation, and then when he came back, he was actually fired because they said he could not substantiate his claims that he made. He then brought that evidence to us. We looked through it. It was pretty overwhelming, and it very much appears what he said occurred, which is that grades were changed and not all grades were changed at the same rate or with the same ratio, which was the CEO's explanation. So she could not explain away this problem. And that's when both the New Orleans Parish School Board and the New Beginnings School Foundation, the charter board, started investigating. Shortly after that, the CEO, Michelle Bluen-Williams, who had been both a leader in the Jefferson Parish and Orleans Parish school districts, resigned from New Beginnings.
So that was a few weeks ago in early May, and now here we are a few weeks later, and a handful of officials at Kennedy High School have been let go.
We heard there had been rumblings of administrative changes at the high school. On Friday, the New Beginnings CEO, Raphael Ging, released a letter to families and said, indeed, that five administrators had been let go from the high school. He wouldn't specify what or why this happened, nor would he clarify whether they were fired or resigned. Ging informed parents last week in a letter, and so he actually said, quote, "We were presented with strong evidence of improper conduct by members of our staff, and we took decisive action," end quote. And that's a letter that he sent out to parents on Friday afternoon. Now, come this week, we're about 10 days after graduation, and I would say probably 40 to 50 people showed up at their board meeting last night.
What was the announced purpose of the board meeting?
The thing that was probably most interesting to people on last night's board agenda was a discussion of the investigation. But what people may or may not have known was that that was going to take place behind closed doors. So the hallways there were filled for over an hour and a half. There were alumni and parents and students all concerned about whether or not these kids have actually earned diplomas or not, just waiting for the school board to announce something. When they did let us all back into the room, they had a very kind of nuanced statement. They just said that they knew that there were issues and they were continuing to look into them and that they weren't sure what the implications might be for seniors and other students at the school.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the biggest concerns that we had when we spoke a few weeks ago was how this would impact students. Since then, there's been a graduation ceremony, but do students know for sure if they qualified to actually graduate?
It sounds like students are really concerned because they're just trying to get a hold of their transcripts and their diplomas. When they walked across the stage, they had kind of a filler card in their diploma booklet. It said, come and pick up your diploma next week. When students went in last week, they were told to come the next day. And students said when they came the next day, they were told they're not ready. So students at this point, it seems unclear whether or not they've completed all the credits to graduate or not.
You know, you spoke with a lot of these students. What are they feeling right now?
I would definitely say they're very nervous. Their parents say that they've put down money for dorm fees. They're trying to figure out their final financial aid. One of them is heading to orientation on Thursday and said that they can't participate without a transcript. So these kids are just trying to get transcripts, which is what you would expect of your high school. And that's not happening right now.
So some of the students you spoke with, they have plans after graduation. They're going on to college. And that's in limbo right now because they can't – not only can they not get their transcript, but they don't know – if they have a complete transcript.
Right. I think that's the big fear. So it would make sense there'd be a tiny bit of a delay after graduation before you got your transcript. But it sounds like if they're not able to get any transcript right now, maybe that means they're not even able to get them from mid-year because we could understand that colleges might not be expecting a one-week turnaround. But these students are nervous because they are not able to hand those over to their colleges right now.
And while a delay might be normal under other circumstances, given the bigger picture of, you know, potential grade inflation, this delay is a little bit more concerning.
Absolutely. And I think that was definitely reflected in and felt in the hallways last night while we were waiting for the board to make some type of announcement. I think a lot of people left with more questions than answers last night.
So at the school board meeting, what message did Board President Raphael Gang have for concerned students and families?
He told them that the investigation into the malfeasance, which he called it, and that's the first time they kind of have publicly called it, used that word to describe the situation, was ongoing. And then he also said that they're determining whether or not there are any implications for students in the graduating class of seniors. And I thought one of the concerning things he said, and I think people got a little anxious in the room when he said this, was, quote, "We don't have all the answers yet, and our team is working as fast as possible to get them," unquote. So if you're going to orientation at the end of this week, you can see where that would be very concerning to families.
What can these parents and students expect next?
Parents and students can expect to hear from Raphael Gang and the rest of the board at a meeting on June 8th. And that meeting is actually going to be on a Saturday. So just something for everybody to keep in mind.
And hopefully get some answers.
Right. That's what we're hoping for.
Marta Jusen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Army Corps of Engineers has delayed the opening of the Morganza Spillway due to a shift in the river forecast. Opening the Morganza, with its implications on private farmland in Louisiana, isn't a decision the Corps takes lightly. Joining me to talk about the process is Ricky Boyette, spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers New Orleans District. The Corps announced on Thursday that it was going to push back the opening of the Morganza Spillway. Originally was set to open Sunday, June 2nd. It's predicted to open on June 6th. What changed that changed your decision?
Sure. You know, we go by the National Weather Service forecast. They're the official forecasting agency, and they give us the data that we can then look at and make decisions. What they were seeing was the water from the Arkansas River, as well as coming into the Mississippi from the Missouri and the Ohio. On June 5th, we were going to reach elevations that could threaten overtopping of the structure. The forecast yesterday modified that. They received new data, and it modified that by pushing those elevations back to where they'll get here on June 9th. Part of the process for operation of the Morganza Spillway is what we call a slow opening, a gradual opening, and that is a three-day process where we regulate how much water is allowed into the floodway. That would begin on June 6th.
Who sets the triggers for when the Army Corps starts to work or manage these spillways?
So it's based on the way the system is designed to do is ultimately the dictator. The way that the Mississippi River system in South Louisiana was designed was maximize the water that a levee reach was designed for, and then you divert when you potentially see water coming over that area. And that means for, say, New Orleans and Bonnie Carey, you have a 1.25 million cubic feet per second design capacity for the levees in New Orleans. So when the water starts to exceed that, when you're putting more pressure on the levees than they're designed to pass, then you divert water at Bonnie Carey. Very much the same thing works for Morganza to the levees in Baton Rouge. They're designed to pass 1.5 million cubic feet per second in the Baton Rouge area. When we look to see water that can exceed 1.5 million, then that's our we must operate to pass the water through Morganza. This year, though, is unique. And one of the factors that we have is we always have to be able to consider elevations of the water specifically as compared to elevations of the structure and the levees themselves. This year, because of the way that the high water has been so long and we're getting new water on top of old water, we're seeing higher elevations at lower flow. What that means is that we are going to get elevations that can overtop the structure, before we get to the flow elements of it. The challenge is if we overtop the structure, we lose the ability to operate it. And what that does by losing the ability to operate is you put the communities below the Morganza control structure, Baton Rouge especially, at a high risk rate because we would not be able to manage those levees as they're designed to be managed.
Mm-hmm. And part of this problem that we're having with the river down here is from flooding in the Midwest. And the Army Corps, not the Louisiana district, but there are Army Corps engineers that are dealing with river concerns on the Arkansas River in Arkansas and in Oklahoma and managing their water problems, absolutely, which eventually dumps into the Mississippi and sort of becomes our situation to manage.
Right. If the way that we look at it here in the New Orleans district is the Mississippi River drains 41% of the country. All of that ultimately has to pass through our front yard down here in South Louisiana. So, yes, the water that is in, that they're fighting in Tulsa and the Missouri River and even, rain in the Ohio Valley, all of that, we have to account for it making its way to us.
And there's not necessarily coordination, or is there, between the Army Corps in Louisiana and the Army Corps in Arkansas? Or is it just sort of when it gets to your district, it's yours to manage?
No, there is coordination throughout the duration of a flood event. So within the Mississippi Valley is where we consider it, and that's the Missouri, the Ohio, all that. We have daily communications. As well as, one of the factors as these events make their way through different regions in the country, the lock and dam systems of other areas, unlike what we have here, they come into play. And so not only do we have to know how much water is entering these areas, but we also need to fully understand the storage capacity of these dams in the Ohio Valley and in the Missouri Valley, as well as the release of this water or how they will pass it through their areas, because that all has a factor on how we have to respond to it here. So this daily coordination, everybody is seeking everybody's input as well as recommendations for how what one does in one area will affect how we have to respond in another area.
I've noticed that the Corps announces, "We expect to open," is the language. And then, about 10 days out, and then a few days later, it's okay, we will open. Because it is a delicate decision, and the factors that go into that decision change.
You're exactly right. And the forecast is ever evolving. And it makes sense. As, you're looking at the predictions before the rain hits the ground, and then you see when the rain hits the ground. But then you can see, like, certain things can slow the river or speed it up, the other rivers as they get to us. And so the National Weather Service is continually evolving it. What we don't want to do is keep anybody in the dark. We want them to know we are now looking at conditions are leaning towards operating. And then we want to make sure that, especially for Morganza, when we are making our recommendations. And the reason that it's so important we do that for Morganza is, unlike the Bonnie Carey Spillway, where we own the property between the structure and the lake, there's not a lot of things that other groups and other people have to do within that landway, that spillway, to prepare. We do that ourselves. But for the Morganza, we don't own the property, and there's livestock, and there's wildlife, and there's camps, and there's oil wells all in this area. We want them to know as far in advance as we can that there's the potential or the intent, and in this case, the decision to move it forward. So we try and keep everybody abreast as we move forward.
Ricky Boyette, thank you so much for your time.
Sure, thank you.
While the Morganza Spillway is making local headlines this week, the Bonnet Carey Spillway is making headlines in Mississippi. Perhaps out of sight and out of mind for many New Orleanians, the Bonnet Carey is having an impact on the Gulf. I'm joined by Alex Kolker, adjunct professor at Tulane University.
We're talking today about the current situation with high river levels in Louisiana, the opening of spillways. I actually went and looked and read about the flooding and the rains that are happening in the Midwest and literally followed the Arkansas River until, on Google Maps, you know, I followed it until it dumped into the Mississippi. And I think that's a useful thing, actually. It felt useful for me to kind of really have that visual connection of of how these waterways work.
Yeah, I think it sounds like a cool, I mean, that's a great idea. I encourage anyone to do that. And, you know, better yet, if you can actually make the drive to do it. There it's a long river, and it's a human, you know, like a lot of rivers, it's been engineered by people. There's a number of dams and locks on the river that are there for navigation and flood control. And those impact the amount of water coming down. And so I think it's a great idea to look at the geography of the area.
I want to talk about the Bonnet Carey Spillway now having been opened twice this year. Mm-hmm. It's only been opened a handful of times, but in recent years, it seems to be happening a lot more often.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question. One of the, obviously there's, you know, the one question that comes into mind is that climate change, right? And, you know, one prediction of climate change is a warmer, wetter Earth. And these changes are certainly consistent with that. Another possibility that is that you've got shorter routes for flood waters to get to rivers, right? Because there's a lot of, like, there's a whole lot more what we call impervious surfaces, pavements, parking lots, a lot more short routes for water to flow off of the land and into the river. So the system, there's some thought that the systems could be flashier, that there could be more water entering in pulses. And then to some extent, the dams upriver have lost some of their capacity because they've silted in. And so it's more difficult to hold water behind rivers. So those are, I would say, the three possible reasons: climate change, a flashier system with more impervious surfaces, and the dams losing their capacity.
The Bonnet Carey opens more frequently than the Morganza, and it doesn't seem to have a large impact on us here in New Orleans. There's some moderate effects in Lake Pontchartrain, but that water diversion actually eventually does have an impact in the Gulf.
Right. So it's designed to relieve flood stress on New Orleans. So in terms of flood impacts, that's exactly what it does. It does not have a huge impact on our flood risk. It doesn't increase our flood risks very much because that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to direct water that was putting pressure on the levees in New Orleans, or that could put pressure on the levees in New Orleans, and direct that into Lake Pontchartrain, where it's going to have a much lower flood risk. So that is a major part of the design of the spillway, and it functions as such. In terms of impacts to the coast, it certainly changes the distribution of fresh water. There's a lot of fresh water that enters the ocean through the Mississippi River. A lot of it comes out in the current configuration of the river. A lot of it comes out near the river's mouth, sort of Empire and south. So south of Empire, Louisiana, by the Bonnet Carey Spillway directs some of that fresh water into Lake Pontchartrain. And so it reduces salinity there. It could lead to algae blooms and low oxygen in Lake Pontchartrain and some areas around Mississippi. But that would probably, you know, if you had not diverted that water, that water would have to go somewhere. And so if you didn't divert that water down the Bonnet Carey, you'd have more fresh water. A, you'd have increased flood risks for New Orleans and other cities along the river, but you'd also ecologically have those issues elsewhere in the system. You'd just have them lower down in lower Breton Sound, for example.
Going back to the Morganza, the impact of that is really very directly felt here in Louisiana, with 25,000 acres of farmland at risk of flooding. What happened the last time the Morganza was opened?
So, I looked last time, and I, in terms of what I also look at, like mud and sediment, And I think that there was a lot of sediment that got pushed out to sea, sediment that might have, so there was a lot of mud that made it out to the open ocean, which I thought was, as a scientist, interesting. In terms of environmental impacts, you know, there were some areas that were flooded. I think that maybe the better thing to think about with the Morganza or the Atchafalaya is what's happening there long term.
Mm-hmm.
And long term, the story is that the Atchafalaya swamp is silting in, and so all areas that used to be swampland and cypress forest are filling in, and they're becoming sort of bottomland hardwood forest, more like gum or tupelo, or maybe some like maples and things like that. And then at the same time, there's deltas, so there's new land forming in Louisiana on the coast. And so the inland swamps are filling in, but also the coast is building land. And I think that that's kind of the overall big picture story, is that this silts in, sending water and mud down the Atchafalaya and the Morganza, fills in swamps, but it also builds land on the coast. I think that that's probably more of the big picture story.
What kind of impact does, you know, filling in swamps have?
You know, these swamps, I mean, it could be, you know, the cypress trees, for, you know, it would change the ecology of the swamps. It would shift these areas away from swamps and the kind of places where cypress thrive. You know, and that's a particularly valuable habitat to, you know, bottomland hardwoods that are probably a less unique habitat. You know, I saw on WWNO they had a report about, you know, is there possibly the ivory-billed woodpecker in Louisiana? It's a species of bird that people have thought was extinct for 50, 75 years, and there's a group of people that think it may exist in Louisiana. If it were to exist, it would exist in places like the Atchafalaya swamp, and filling that in with hardwoods would make it less suitable for that bird. There's a whole lot of other things that like swamps, and so you would shift that ecology away from a swampland forest to a bottomland hardwood forest.
It's really important to think about how every way that we manage water, there's a different impact.
Yeah, and there's a different impact, and often there's a different set of people that are being impacted by that, right? You could change, if you add fresh water to an area, you could, for example, over the long, like fresh water and sediment to the coast, for example, you could create an area maybe that was, you know, better for duck hunting but not as good for fishing, right? And then you might have some, you know, fishermen might be less happy about the fact that you're losing habitat for fish, and duck hunters might be happy that you're getting habitat for duck habitat.
Sure. Those are sort of environmental economic impacts. You know, and then of course the long-term environmental impacts that we might then have to mitigate the result of those down the road.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly like a lot of this is a set of trade-offs, and it comes down to some very human questions about what do we value and why do we make those values? And so to some extent, you know, when we're talking about sending water and mud around the coast, it, in my view, it gets into a lot of values questions. What do we value and why do we make those value judgments? It comes down to some very, very interesting trade-offs.
Alex Kolker, thank you so much for your time.
Jessica, thank you.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Behind the Lens. I'm your host, Jessica Rosegard. We'll be back next week. And please consider supporting nonprofit journalism in New Orleans. Go to support.thelensnola.org to make a donation today.